are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
4 seconds left. He's got the ball. He should have it. Isaiah hangs on the ball, flips it up to the Raptors. Detroit is the city of champions again.
Detroit basketball.
What is happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Friday, September the 18th, and Fridays with Brian Conference Finals Edition. This is your boy Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, a sports writer here in Detroit City covering sports gambling for PlayMichigan.com, a Pistons fan and follower my whole life, just like you guys, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. We are almost all started with the conference finals now. We got the Eastern Conference Finals two games in and the West getting started tonight. So today we're talking hoops, we're talking playoff basketball, we're talking about the Miami Heat and the Celtics. We're also going to talk about the Clippers from earlier in the week, maybe some things that the Pistons can learn while they're watching the playoffs, and of course look ahead to the Western Conference Finals, the LA Lakers and the Denver Nuggets, which begins tonight. Give me a follow on Twitter, by the way, at @Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H. Another underscore for that, also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account, and check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons Dash Matt Shook. But Brian, Fridays with Brian, it is now time to bring him in. Brother Brian, what's going on?
Not much, an exciting week, getting down to the nitty-gritty here in basketball.
Yeah, these are the real teams, right? And we kind of figured the Milwaukee Bucks would be among the teams in the Eastern Conference Finals pretty much all season long. And if not them, maybe the Toronto Raptors, but the 1 and 2 seeds fall in the second round, and now we've got Boston and Miami. Does this feel like the conference finals to you, watching these two teams?
It does, actually. These have been the best two teams in the East. Make no mistake about it. Maybe not on paper, but on the court they've been. And Miami has been playing obnoxiously well in the playoff bubble. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, these two teams have earned it. They, you know, Miami just kind of steamrolling through everybody. Boston and Toronto going to, you know, Toronto took Boston to the brink, but, you know, Boston fought through. So I feel that this actually feels more like the Eastern Conference Finals to me than when Milwaukee's there, because I'm used to seeing the Boston Celtics and the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals. Mm-hmm. I'm not used to seeing Milwaukee there. So it actually does feel like the Eastern Conference Finals, and I'm looking forward to a very competitive series. We've had two very competitive games. They've just gone both Miami's way. In this series, Boston better step up, or this series can get out of hand really quickly.
106-101 was the final on Thursday night, with the Heat taking the 2-0 series lead. Boston goes up in the first half. Miami, from like the middle of the third quarter to the middle of the fourth quarter, takes command. Boston comes back with a charge of their own to retake the lead before Miami makes the big plays down the stretch. Goran Dragic knocks down a bunch of big shots from the mid-range. He finishes with 25 to lead Miami. Bam Adebayo, 21 points and 10 rebounds. A quiet night for Jimmy Butler offensively. He's got 14, 6 of 6 from the free throw line, including some big ones late. For the Celtics, the guys you would figure, Jason Tatum, 21, Kemba Walker, 23, Jaylen Brown, 21. And, you know, this is a very solid Boston team. They've got a bright future ahead of them. There's no doubt about that. But I just can't help but feel, and we talked about this at the trade deadline, obviously we're biased because we want Boston to make moves that would help themselves right now, particularly with the Pistons, because that could be moves that could benefit the Pistons' future. But here's a team that's sitting there with Grant Williams, with Brad Wanamaker, who's playing pretty well. I'm not going to give Brad Wanamaker too much crap. But Romeo Langford, you got Time Lord Rob Williams, who didn't play tonight, Carson Edwards. Nice, decent young pieces that really aren't helping you right now. And then you've got a center in Daniel Tice, who I think we all think is kind of a nice player, but not someone who's going to exploit that zone that Eric Spoelstra puts there in the second half to turn the tide of the game. Do we need to, because here's my leading question of the night. Should Danny Ainge get a little bit of poking and prodding, maybe more nationally right now than the Boston-friendly national basketball media is going to be giving him during what might look like an exit to possibly an inferior team in the Eastern Conference Finals?
Well, this came on also quickly for Boston, I think. The maturation of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum is probably a year or two ahead of schedule. And there's certainly some room for some upgrades with, you know, Daniel Tice, is, like you said, is a nice player, but there's probably some room for upgrade there at that position somewhere around the league. So I think he's probably a year or two ahead of whatever his plan was. So I think he's probably going to be playing a little catch up, and that may benefit the Pistons, as, you know, they seem to be the team that's kind of positioned themselves to be at the middle of some moving pieces here in the NBA this offseason. So, you know, keeping those phone lines open to Danny Ainge would probably be beneficial, like you had mentioned earlier, because, yeah, he's got a lot of younger pieces that he could turn into some more talented rotation guys here down in, you know, now that they look like the team that they were probably expecting to be in 2 or 3 years. And as Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown go, and as those guys continue to get better, and, you know, each of them knocking on the door of superstardom, Jason Tatum may already be there. But yeah, I think that this next year or two would really dictate what the feeling around Danny Ainge and that Boston front office would be nationally.
Yeah, I just think that they're, you know, they got these 3 first-round picks this year. I don't know where on your rotation you're going to fit in 3 more young guys, you know, the number 14 pick in the draft, the Bucks pick, and then somewhere in the 20s as well. I believe it's Memphis. So where do the, you know, where do you fit these players in terms of your development? You can't even find minutes in a big game to get some of these guys out there already. I don't know. It just seems to me like you're sitting there with these 3 or 4 young players that would be nice movable pieces. You got 3 draft picks coming in, but yet you can't. It just seems to me like a Derrick Rose, a Langston Galloway, even a Christian Wood would have helped out the Celtics if they would have went aggressive and said, hey, how about 2 first-round picks for Christian Wood? Something like that. I mean, I know there's salaries to match and it gets a little bit more complicated, but he's a pretty much bottom rung minimum contract guy. So you could have done it. But of course, when you're looking at the Miami Heat across the court, Bam Adebayo, not even quietly anymore, but makes the big block in game 1, and now he's an all-star and not just like one of those guys you sneak on as the last all-star. You might expect this guy to, you know, emphatically make all-star teams going forward. And of course, credit to Jimmy Butler as well for what he's the pace that he's set with this team. And I know Heat culture was kind of already there, but when you look at this Miami team, what stands out to you? I mean, we knew that they've been playing well in the bubble. We knew that they were a very good team throughout the season, so it's not like this is completely out of nowhere. But a team that's sitting in the driver's seat 2 wins away from the NBA Finals, I mean, where is this coming from for you?
Well, what's been a revelation to me for them is just how many, you know, areas they can get points from. They're a really tough team to stop. Goran Dragic, I've always been a Goran Dragic fan. I've always felt he's been criminally underrated in this league.
Yeah, some injuries the last few years that have slowed his career a little bit. But maybe didn't get to those heights that you figured when he was the young player in Phoenix, but has been very good and is now healthy and really playing the best basketball of his career during the playoffs.
Absolutely. And the outside shoot, the perimeter game of the Miami Heat is what drives this team, is what I've noticed. I mean, it's been feast or famine for them this series. In the 2 games that they've won, I mean, we played 8 quarters outside of the overtime, which is a little different. In 6 of those quarters, they've either scored under 20 or over 30. So it's been feast or famine, and it's been dictated by that outside shooting. I mean, you saw today Duncan Robinson getting off right away, right in the first half of the first quarter. And if their outside shooting is going, this team is going to be a tough out for anybody.
Yeah, and 43 3-pointers attempted, so obviously a huge number there, but 32.6%, not like they were – knocking down shots and crazily unconscious or anything like that. Tyler Hero, 1-for-8 from three off the bench. But like you said, Duncan Robinson, 6-of-12 from three, did not attempt a two-point shot throughout the game. And Jay Crowder wasn't shy about putting him up either at 3-for-10. And Goran Dragic knocks down a good amount of shots as well. So Eric Spoelstra, Duncan Robinson, of course, Michigan player as well, so nice for some local interest there. But we'll see how this continues. This series will continue Saturday night, so make your weekend plans for the 8:30 tip. Obviously, Miami coming back home, I guess, right. In the bubble, up 2-0 against Boston. But we'll talk about Denver and LA a little bit later. But that series begins tonight. That's a 9 o'clock start. It's going to be TNT for the Western Conference Finals, ESPN for the Eastern Conference Finals the rest of the way, and then the Lakers and Denver will continue their series with game 2, 7:30 on Sunday. So and then we'll kind of go forward every other day from there on out, night games the rest of the way. But let's talk about, after the break, how much the Pistons can learn from some of this stuff, and also let's look back to some of the vanquished teams coming up next. That's coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast.
Yes!
All right, now, who do you want the Pistons to draft? 810-666-1546. We're looking for your responses. Call up the Google voicemail line and stand for your guy. Let us know that the Pistons at number 7, or do you want them to trade up or trade down? Stand for your guy. Pick one guy and tell us why the Pistons should select him. We'll play those voicemails throughout the next week or so. 810-666-1546. Tell us who you are, where you're from, who you want the Pistons to draft, and why. Take a couple minutes. Let it breathe a little bit here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. But back with Fridays with Brian. Brian, let's go back a couple days to the Clippers. You know, they became kind of a punchline, and everyone's getting the jokes off on Playoff P. And a couple days later now, I don't know. It just feels like the Clippers to me, and you had the tweet on social media on the Locked On Pistons saying that maybe the Clippers are another team that need to make a big shakeup. I don't know. I don't quite put the Clippers into that category right now. It just feels to me like, you know, you're not going to trade Kawhi, obviously. Mm-hmm. Why would you? And Paul George, I don't know. I don't think that you trade him either. To me, I think you kind of run back the Clippers and just kind of hope that year two – that things kind of fall into place, because really, you know, you did go to game 7 in the second round, and I know it was an embarrassing ending how it all went down, but I think if a couple things are different, I'm thinking about Montrezl Harrell in particular. I think that obviously him missing the most of the bubble and coming back and dealing with the death of his grandmother he was very close with, that maybe he has some conditioning issues going forward. He's a guy that if the Clippers can figure out a way to bring him back, and he's playing at the form he was throughout the regular season when he's the sixth man of the year, then maybe it's a different story for these Clippers. But do you think that the Clippers are like some of these teams, like the Rockets, who I'm assuming would love to make a move if they could? The 76ers got to figure something out going forward. Do you think the Clippers are one of those teams too?
Well, I think the Clippers are an interesting case for a couple of reasons. The main being, they've got two such mercurial superstars, like, and the relationship between those two guys is something, you know, obviously wasn't jiving between the two of them near the end of the, you know, in the bubble anyway. And I think a lot of it's got to be dictated on that relationship. You're right. You don't move Kawhi. Kawhi's there. So I think maybe you do go to Kawhi, and, you know, he was the guy who brought, you know, forced the move to bring Paul George in. He could be the guy that, you know, forces the move to maybe bring Paul George out, depending on what is offered out there is packaging. What I'm wondering more is, you know, we're talking about this collapse of the Clippers, and we talked about, you know, last segment with Danny Ainge not getting as much. I haven't heard a lot about Doc Rivers. I mean, this is a guy who's been in the league, won championships as a head coach, and you know, how he wasn't able to kind of wrap his arms around this team and end up getting outcoached by three games by Malone there in Denver. So where do you think the future of Doc Rivers is in L.A.?
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy who's earned his place as one of the best coaches in the NBA over the past decade plus, and that's obvious. But, yeah, I mean, maybe there does need to be a fall guy. He's outcoached by Mike Malone, throwing double teams at Nikola Jokic when, you know, you and I can see that he's going to find the open guy and turn this into the Bill Walton show out there. But, yeah, so some real questions about Doc Rivers, certainly, and the way that locker room didn't respond. I mean, just the, you know, the motivational rah-rah type of stuff. You know, there was some chemistry issues throughout the season that Montrezl Harrell was very candid about during the middle of the year. And I know that Kawhi Leonard is kind of a tough nut to crack as far as how to figure out how to reach him. And I know that he's not the problem. He had the one bad game, obviously, in Game 7. But Paul George, I mean, you know, there's jokes flying all over the place about him. You can bring up all the bad games that he's had in the playoffs in his career. But I don't know. It's tough to fire Doc Rivers. It seems like Steve Ballmer and Doc Rivers are also pretty close. He's built up a lot of good capital with his team, you know, how he handled the whole Donald Sterling situation in the past. To me, I think Doc Rivers gets another year if he wants, and if Kawhi Leonard wants. I mean, maybe there's a world that exists that Doc Rivers wants to go. There's always been kind of rumors that he might end up back in Orlando because he likes that spot that he was in the past. So, you know, maybe there is a world where he wants to coach someone else or somewhere else. Or I think it might be up to him, basically, mm-hmm. my long story short on it. But looking at those teams like the Rockets, if the Clippers do want to make a big move, the Sixers, you know, there's teams like the Pistons who could maybe facilitate one of these deals. Or maybe a team, you know, like Detroit or like Charlotte wants to take on that bad contract for the assets. There's a world where those exist. But maybe between those types of teams, there's like a big superstar for superstar type of deal that might be out there to just for no other reason than to shuffle the deck and see, you know, if Paul George and Joel Embiid might be able to coexist in Philadelphia, something like that. I wonder if a move out there that we're not thinking about could be out there this offseason.
Yeah, absolutely. And the NBA has been great the last couple of years with offseason drama and offseason movement that really have shifted the power structure of the league. And it seems like it's been happening more and more. Last offseason, I obviously was the biggest of the bunch, but even for the couple years before, it seems like every year there's headline grabbing moves. And I'm sure this offseason is going to be no different. Is weird as this season has, you know, come to an end or is coming to an end as that. I think the offseason probably is going to follow suit and, you know, throw us a couple of curveballs. And like you said, there's some very big names, some very talented players and some very different personalities that we're including with some of the teams that we're talking about, Philadelphia, Houston, you know, even, you know, Milwaukee to a certain extent, mm-hmm. and the Clippers, you know, some shuffling of some of those big players and those superstars could really impact the league in a very interesting way. And it's exciting to watch, and it's exciting to, and maybe I'm overstating this a little bit, to kind of be, you know, the team that could catch a lot of this fallout. And I'm really excited to see what, you know, the Stefanski front office, the Weaver front office does with actual cap room for the first time, because, you know, they've been pretty conservative and made some very good moves, but, you know, nothing earth shattering, where now they're kind of in a position where they can be more aggressive here. So I'd like to see what role the Pistons are when they jump in and hopefully see where some of these cards land.
So maybe like a five-way Bledsoe, Ben Simmons, Russ Westbrook, Chris Paul, Paul George deal. Is that what we're thinking about? Something like that. And then maybe like a key party, right? You draw the name out of the hat to see who the one you actually get
is. That right? Is not like the key parties I've been to.
Okay, fair enough. Here's another name. I know we talked about him a little bit a second ago, actually, but Montrezl Harrell, sixth man of the year, going into unrestricted free agency. The Pistons are sitting here with cap room. We spent a lot of time talking about Fred VanVleet on this podcast, and the similarities are there. With these two guys, it's like the perimeter version of Montrezl Harrell and vice versa, the post version of Fred VanVleet. Guys that are in line for big paydays who probably maybe hurt that payday a little bit here in the bubble and during the playoffs. Young guys that are second-round picks or undrafted that just kind of fell through the cracks that have built their careers up to the point where they're here at 26, 27 years old, getting ready for big deals. And maybe a couple months ago, it might have looked like a $70 to $90 million payday on the line. But and I'm not saying that they've tanked their value completely, but do you think the Pistons and a Christian Wood re-signing with the Pistons probably makes this whole conversation null and void, but if Christian Wood walks, is there a world where Montrezl Harrell fits for the Pistons' plan?
I think Montrezl Harrell has a lot of the DNA that Troy Weaver talked about for the Pistons. Now, I may be a prisoner of the moment here, but those last 4 minutes in that Toronto-Boston series really, you know, I was on the fence about Van Fleet. I'm kind of off the fence on the side of we shouldn't go near that for the price that it's going to cost. Let somebody else spend that money. But Montrezl Harrell, who I think will probably come in, you know, cheaper than Van Fleet, fits more of the mold of the player, the, you know, kind of an energy guy. You know, he has some physicality about him, and I would, you know, I'd like to see that type of player with the Pistons, kind of a, you know, a more offensively talented junkyard dog kind of thing. So I would look longer and harder at Montrezl Harrell than I would Van Vliet, but I'm not sure that either of those is the right guy for where you're at as a franchise right now. I think Harrell may be somebody who, when you're another year or two down the road and some of your guys develop, that's kind of a complimentary piece that you add to kind of put you over the hump. And I don't know that you want to spend that money right now on that type of player.
Yeah, I agree ultimately, but I will say this, that I think that the Pistons need to make calls to both of these guys. And if there's a world where the Toronto Raptors or LA Clippers or both, I don't know, want to move on or possibly don't want to give up any kind of you know, of their cap flexibility going forward to these guys, and they got the bird rights on both these guys, so they can retain these guys over the cap. But if there's a bargain to be had now, going in a normal world, these guys are $20 million type of players now. But if there's a world where you can get Van Vliet or Harrell for something less than like 15 a year, and it's a maybe even a, it could be even a longer term contract, because these are good young players. And again, and I know the timeline for the Pistons is a 2 or 3 year type of thing, and I've talked about that ad nauseum, but I do think that they need to be bargain hunting. And if there's a way to get a good contract, use that cap space to do it. Now, again, I would prioritize taking on a bad deal and getting some draft picks and doing a little bit of a tank type of thing. But I think that those are conversations that need to be had. Now, ultimately, I think both of these guys probably end up taking big valued 1 year deals to stay in their places. And then maybe those teams can kind of ride out one more year with their current configurations, see how that year plays out. And then when we get to 2021, that helps the player, because then in the summer that everyone's got cap space, maybe they can be one of those teams that is, or one of those players that's like a fallback plan for someone who might have missed out on some stars, and they end up getting that $80 million deal that might be out there going forward. But like I said, I think the Pistons should at least make those calls.
Absolutely.
And see how it goes.
Absolutely, make the call. And the role I would like to see the Pistons play in both of those guys' future is to jack up the price for whoever does end up signing them. I think that would be probably the most beneficial thing the Pistons could do. And I agree with you on the bad contracts. Kick the can down the road a little bit, where you kind of, you know, have another year or two to see exactly what you have with some of these pieces, like who you're going to have moving forward. So I agree with you on that point.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes with the summer. A lot to talk about. Well, summer, we always say summer. It's the off season, I guess, is a better way of putting it. But let's talk Western Conference Finals. This is coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. But hey, got to tell you about Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. The new and improved Built Bar is even more delicious than before. The 6 new flavors make it 18 amazing flavors now, including the nut and non-nut flavors. The 6 new ones are just as good sounding as the OGs. Caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. Add those to the original 12. You got yourself a box of goodness. Bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They are soft and easy to chew. And the 1A and 1B, I say 1B is the best part, is that they're so healthy. They're great for the health-conscious guy. It's going to give you some energy in the morning, maybe the pre-workout, maybe the post-workout, maybe a late-night snack that you're not going to feel too guilty about having. You can lose and maintain the weight while indulging in a delicious treat. The bars, they're low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, high-fiber, great for the keto diet, any kind of low-carb diet that you're looking for. They got the free cooler with purchase while supplies last, so get in on that as soon as you possibly can. Go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, and you get $10 off your next order. They reset those promo codes. So even if you use them before, you can still use it once again. That's use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. All right, we got Fridays with Brian continuing here. And tonight, the Western Conference Finals. Lakers are home, taking on the Denver Nuggets in the bubble. Surprise team, those Denver Nuggets. I guess it's going to open up the floor for you here. What about the Denver Nuggets has surprised you the most or impressed you the most, other than the resiliency of being down 3-1 and just believing and pulling through in the last two series?
I fell in love with this team last year, and to see that they've improved again this year, and the two guys, Murray and Jokic, are my favorite two superstars to watch play together. It's going to be interesting. They're the most unique, I think, tandem in the NBA. I'm not saying that they're the best, but they create problems. You've got a 7-footer who can pass as well as any 7-footer, or basically 7-footer, has in the NBA, basically. And Jamal Murray, who's really, coming into himself here in the playoffs and becoming a superstar. And I think that ultimately the two stars in the Los Angeles Lakers are probably going to pull this one out. But I felt that the Clippers would also do this to the Denver Nuggets as well. So they don't stop surprising me. I don't stop falling in love with those guys. And, I'm rooting for Denver, and I hope that, they continue this ride. Jokic has gone to the seventh game in every playoff series he's ever been in, so why stop that streak now, right?
Yeah, and you mentioned the two top guys, and adulation is all well-deserved, but I love a guy like Jeremy Grant out there who's busting it. Paul Millsap's kind of towards the end of his career, but all of his career he's been that guy as well. Torrey Craig is another guy who's going to go out there and compete. And how about Gary Harris, who steps into the bubble and goes directly into the playoffs after dealing with the illness that he had, and Michigan State guy, of course. And, he's not knocking down shots at the clip like some of those great shooters in the NBA, thinking about Miami Heat and some of the other great shooters out there, but a capable offensive player who's really bringing it defensively against some of the league's best players.
Absolutely, and it's always fun to see a guy that has some connection to our home state do well in the playoffs and make a name for himself. So I'm happy to see it. And, again, I think Denver's been the most entertaining team in the playoffs to watch. And they're quickly becoming my favorite Western Conference team.
And speaking of state ties, the Denver Nuggets, how about Flint Town? In these Western Conference Finals, Monte Morris from Flint, JaVale McGee for the Lakers, and Kyle Kuzma of the Lakers as well, all from Flint. So an unbelievable, kind of like the Mateen Cleaves and Mo Peterson, Flintstones part two here in the Western Conference Finals. Hopefully they get an Instagram picture out of that at some point after one of these games. But, yeah, I tend to agree with you that as fun as Denver is, and here we are writing them off once again, we've been writing them off all these playoffs after being down 3-1 a couple times. But the Lakers are going to be a very tough team, and Jokic and Davis will be one of the more entertaining matchups that you can imagine. They're both going to be a handful for each other, obviously, but any team with LeBron James, tough to bet against these days. This part of this part of the calendar, but obviously this part of the playoffs is a little bit different than your yearly calendar feature. And at the end of the day, it's just still LeBron. And it's like every year we always try to say, and Kawhi took the belt last year, let's be honest, but it's like year after year after year with this guy. And I think, what is it, he made the All-NBA team for the 16th time, the only player in NBA history to make 16 All-NBA teams. I mean, we could do a whole nother episode on this guy, and we probably should, but just unbelievable from LeBron.
LeBron James, I mean, the excellence is taken for granted at this point. I mean, that's probably the most reverential thing you can say about him, is you just expect such a high level of play. And he's never, I want to say, individual seasons, but, throughout his career, he's always exceeded expectations as high as they've been since he's been 16 years old. And, you know, even to come in and lead the league in assists in his 17th year, something he's never done. It's just, he has just, you know, raised the bar so high for himself that it's almost an afterthought in the NBA. It's kind of one of those things like back in the 90s, other players would win the MVP, but you always knew Jordan was the best player in the league. And I think it's kind of the same thing. You just can't give it to this guy every year. Although you could probably make an argument every year that he deserves it.
Could be looking at the LeBron James against his former team, the Miami Heat, in the NBA Finals. Interesting wrinkle there, although that seems like a long time ago, and it was a long time ago at this point. But thanks again to Brother Brian for joining us on Fridays with Brian, as he always does. And that wraps up this edition of Locked On Pistons. I am your host, Matt Shook. Now, play your smart device to play the most recent episode of Locked On NBA. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you guys on Monday.